mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, less than 2 weeks until the big show, it's an opportunity for scientists and educators to use kids' fascination with the solar eclipse as a springboard to inspire the next generation of leaders in science and space discovery. Also this morning, happening around town, Hope Shines Bright. The annual benefit auction for Findlay's Hope House is a little more than 2 weeks away. We'll get details. And spring has officially arrived. We'll get an update on April programs and activities from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. First off, I want to apologize for my voice this morning. It's a little rough, and I don't know why. I don't feel bad or anything. I don't know if it's a touch of laryngitis or whether it's something in the air. But I've been popping throat lozenges like candy here this morning, and so we'll try and muddle through, but I might sound a little raspy at times this morning, so I apologize for that, but we'll be just fine. Saw this story on the Newswire. One of the first things that jumped out at me is every morning, first thing that I do, check the Newswire, what happened overnight, what's going on in the world, looking for those, especially those stories that might not necessarily make the huge headlines but are worth knowing about nonetheless. This was one of the first things that popped out and grabbed my attention. A Toledo teenager is facing charges after allegedly being caught with a gun at the Franklin Park Mall. Police say the incident happened on Saturday when a group of teens were instructed to leave the mall after causing some sort of disturbance, some sort of disorder, so they were asked to leave. And police say a 13-year-old discarded a firearm inside a store as he attempted to flee the area. A 13-year-old discarded a firearm as he attempted to flee. The teen was taken into custody. No injuries were reported, but man, I saw that story and just 13-year-old left me shaking my head. What is this world coming to? I tell you, crazy. Some of the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of stores, crime and stores, shoplifting has become a big problem for retail establishments of all sizes. Big box stores, more and more, are putting more and more of their merchandise behind glass cases, under lock and key behind glass cases. It works because people can't just take things off the shelves and stick it in their bag or their purse or whatever and help themselves to that five-finger discount. So it works, but those barriers ruin the overall vibe of shopping. Why do we go to the store in the first place as opposed to ordering off of Amazon so that we can pick the item up, hold it, feel it, inspect it, you know? And if it's under lock and key, well, heck, it's no different than looking at a picture online, so I may as well shop online, right? So anyway, a new product for retail establishments has got the fix. Oh, and the other thing that becomes a problem, I've had this happen, you got to find an employee to unlock the case. And so many stores are cutting back on their staff or are short-staffed just because they can't find people to work. It becomes harder to find somebody to open up the case. So it's a big problem. Anyway, the solution in some cases is worse than the problem. So a new product called the Freedom Case is now on the market. This is a really cool idea. It allows consumers to open the locked display cabinets with their cell phones. And you think, okay, but if consumers can unlock the cases, why have them locked in the first place? Well, here's the trick. In order to get a virtual key to unlock the cabinet with your cell phone, it requires you to share your a a certain level of your personal information, your name, your address, your phone number. And then you get a code that will unlock the display case. So if something comes up missing, they've got your contact information. They know how to find you and how to get a hold of you. One company that is already using the device in about 40 of its locations says about 327 people were involved in one-third of shoplifting incidents in their store, implying that the uptick in theft could be the work of a relatively few people, ruining it for everybody, right? So this, they believe, will fix that problem. Great idea. Great use of technology. By the way, speaking of crime, this stores in high crime areas are closing their doors because they're losing so much money from this. And not just stores, it's restaurants as well. Yesterday, it was closing day in Oakland, California, for In-N-Out Burger. And this didn't make headlines in this part of the country, obviously. But the California burger chain officially closed down its Oakland location at 1 a.m. Monday. What is significant about this is the first time in company history that they have closed one of their restaurants. They have never had to close a location before. Been in business 75 years, and they have never had to close one of the restaurants. And certainly not. Back in January, the company said the decision to close was due to ongoing issues with crime. This particular location had been in business for 18 years. And over the weekend, they had a flood of regular customers coming in to say goodbye and have one last double-double at In-N-Out Burger. Have you ever had an In-N-Out Burger? If you've ever been out west, and it's one of the things that I try to do at least once when I get to Vegas, because they have an In-N-Out Burger on the Strip. And so I try and have an In-N-Out Burger because you can't get them here. So it's just, I don't know, it's a burger. And it's good, but anyway, it's just kind of unique. But anyway, more of those. First one closed to ever close. It's wild. this was making headlines about a week and a half ago. The bill that passed the House and is now being considered in the Senate that would potentially ban TikTok in the United States, unless they divest themselves of their foreign ownership by China, their Chinese ownership. TikTok, leading up to the vote in the House, really pressured their content creators to pressure lawmakers to reject the bill. Didn't work. They voted for it. Maybe what TikTok should have done was enlist the help of the kids of the politicians in Congress. Turns out that they are maybe the best lobbyists for TikTok. Story here on the Newswire, politicians who support the TikTok ban are receiving pushback from their own Gen Z kids. Senator John Fetterman, Democrat of Pennsylvania, said, "I'm driving home and my daughter sent me some texts saying, please don't destroy TikTok." And she pointed out that because she's the daughter of a senator who could vote to shut off TikTok, she's concerned that she might get bullied at school for, you know, how her dad votes, which I guess for her would be a real possibility. Republican Nancy Mace of South Carolina said her children were trying to lobby her over dinner recently. Apparently it worked. Nancy Mace was a no vote on the ban. My kids are happy with mom. They are not embarrassed this time, she said. So there is that. just a reminder that sometimes we forget that politicians or senators and congressmen and women are people too, with families and all of the family issues like the rest of us. And finally this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, here is an application of technology that is, wow, an outcome that is just crazy. And were it not for DNA testing, these two guys from Canada would have never known that they had been switched at birth. Two Canadian men came to find out that they were switched at birth following a DNA test in 2022. Richard Bouvet discovered that he had a different ancestry in his DNA than what his parents did. The history, the family history, didn't match up what his DNA was saying and what his parents' ancestry was. Meanwhile, Eddie Ambrose also took a DNA test around the same time and discovered his DNA didn't match up with his parents' heritage. Now, how they came to find each other, I don't know if these two knew each other already or whether, you know, how they got matched up. But obviously, they discovered something, some sort of inconsistency. And so they investigated further, and they learned that the pair were apparently switched at birth in 1955. And now the Manitoba province has issued them a formal apology. But the men are also seeking financial compensation, as you might imagine. I would think that they would probably be deserving of some sort of compensation for, I mean, born in 1955, so you're talking like 60, 70 years almost that they have not known their real parents. That is just a crazy story. But again, were it not for these home DNA tests and modern technology, they might never have known. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, rainy and windy today, a high around 60, a chance of showers tonight, a low around 40. Six assessment teams from FEMA are expected in Ohio today to survey damage in 11 counties from tornadoes that hit the state on March 14th.
Governor Mike DeWine said the state asked the Federal Emergency Management Agency to inspect the areas hit. Once the teams are done assessing the damage to the homes and buildings there, they'll decide whether federal resources are needed to help. I'm Colin Dorsey.
One of the tornadoes was an EF1 that touched down in southwest Hancock County, damaging several houses and barns. See video on our website. St. Andrew's United Methodist Church in Findlay has created a laundry facility at their annex at 214 West Sandusky Street, where families can do their laundry for free.
We just were trying to decide how St. Andrew's could help the community, and in our brainstorming, we came up with one thing was to help people wash their clothes so kids can go to school with clean clothes.
Sue Friel says a big goal of the free laundry facility is to give parents and kids living in cars or tents and who can't afford a laundromat a place to do their laundry for free. Get more information from Sue in our conversation with her about the free laundry facility and the story on our website. More funding is coming to the Central Ohio Intel Project.
A major new investment necessary to build the Intel plant in Licking County and cement Ohio's leadership in the semiconductor industry. The $8.5 million investment will boost Intel's initial investment, creating additional jobs and building a new regional chip-making ecosystem. Jay Fox, ONN News.
Findlay City Schools says Mrs. Sarah Palmer, community member, parent advocate, and changemaker, was honored at the Ohio School Board Association's Northwest Region Spring Conference, where she was selected as a community service hero for the countless hours she has poured into the Chamberlain Hill Land Lab. The school district says thanks to her guidance, Chamberlain Hill students now have an outdoor learning space to utilize, care for, and take pride in. See a picture of the award presentation and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
We are now less than 2 weeks out from the big show, but what about after the eclipse? Scientists, educators, and parents can use this once-in-a-lifetime event as sort of a springboard to encourage and inspire young people to learn more about science and the universe. It is kind of the lasting legacy of the eclipse, if you will. We are joined by Dean Regas. He is an astronomer, an author, co-host of the series Stargazers that you may have seen on PBS. And best of all, he is an Ohio native. So, Dean, thank you very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. This eclipse is going to be huge. I'm excited.
And, you know, over the past several weeks, I've spoken to a number of scientists about various aspects of this event, and they almost always say that it was something like this, some sort of astronomical event that they witnessed at a young age that triggered their fascination. Is that kind of your story as well?
Yeah, I mean, a total solar eclipse is by far the most amazing astronomical event you will see in the sky. It rivals anything you would see in your entire life as being so cool. And so it is totally inspiring. We saw this a lot in 2017 with the last total solar eclipse, which was down in Kentucky and Tennessee. At least that's close to where we were in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And we saw this uptick in interest in astronomy and space science from this because it is an awe-inspiring sight. You're left moved afterwards, and you're pretty much in awe of the universe. And so I'm expecting the same thing with this one.
So that leads us to the question that we want to raise and talk about this morning. You know, what happens after the eclipse? How can parents and educators sort of latch on to that and continue to nurture that inquisitiveness, if you will, moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to astronomy, I'm just a big kid. I love learning all the stuff as it comes in. And so every day I get to learn something new about space. And so what people can do after the eclipse is get in contact with your local astronomy club. Pretty much every town in Ohio and Indiana have astronomy clubs you can get associated with. There's science centers, museums, planetariums, all sorts of places that you can get involved with. And also, you know, you can bother your teachers a little bit too and say, hey, you know, let's do some field trips to some of these cool places like the Armstrong Air and Space Museum, which is going to be a huge like epicenter for this eclipse coming up on April 8th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in our area. I know you have been working very closely with the Neil Armstrong Air and Space Museum in Wapakoneta on all of their eclipse related programming. They have a number of things that are going on before, during, and after April 8th.
Absolutely. They're going to make a whole weekend of it. So the eclipse is on a Monday, but that whole weekend, Saturday and Sunday, they're going to have special hours, special events, special tours. And then Eclipse Day, ooh, man, this is going to be an interesting one. I mean, there's going to be probably tens of thousands of people coming to Wapakoneta because, you know, it's Neil Armstrong's hometown. Sure. That museum is so cool off of the interstate. So it's going to be a big eclipse party that day where they're going to get about 3 minutes, 56 seconds of totality. So they're pretty close to the center line also, which makes them a pretty ideal spot.
And, you know, we need this this fascination with the next generation, that creativity that they bring to it. Because for all of the talk about these things that we want to do in exploring the universe, like traveling to Mars or colonizing the moon someday, we're talking about it now, but the fact is, we really don't know how we're going to pull all of this off. That will be up to the next generation to figure out a lot of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're about to be sending people back to the moon with the Artemis mission. And then for me, the next steps, I hope, is Mars. Like, I would love to see some people on Mars in my lifetime. It is a daunting task to be able to send somebody to Mars and back. We're just doing some kind of steps to go to the moon first, practice it out, then go to Mars, I hope. But that's the thing, is the people seeing this eclipse now as kids or students in high school, they're going to be the future astronauts, and they're going to be maybe even the first people on Mars.
So in these last couple of weeks, the lead up to this, what should parents and teachers, but especially parents, speaking to parents, be doing to sort of prepare their kids and get them ready for this event?
Well, my first hope is fingers crossed that school districts all around cancel school that day, because having kids stuck in school that day during a total solar eclipse in Ohio, That presents a whole lot of problems. So hopefully, number one, school's out.
Yeah.
Number two, I hope that parents take the day off too, and they can. I have on my website, actually, I have an astronomer note that you can use to send to your employer to get you out of work. It probably won't work, but they'll at least have a good chuckle about it. So planning ahead is really important.
Yeah.
And for those that are not in totality, that are going to have 98% of the sun blocked, all I can say is please go to totality. It is totally worth it to get into that part. You need those special eclipse glasses to be able to look safely during the partial stages. Mm-hmm. But during totality, that's the point where you can just look right at it without glasses. So as long as you're 100% in totality, then you can do that. And you don't need equipment. You don't really need telescopes, binoculars, cameras. You want to just take this in with your own eyes.
Yeah, that's one of the really cool things about it, is that you don't need any special equipment to enjoy this. Although, again, as we're talking about nurturing our kids' fascination with it, maybe afterwards you want to go out and get a telescope or, you know, for the kids or something so that they can do more of that exploration on their own.
Absolutely. And getting a telescope is always a little tricky because there's so many different models out there. So you want to pick one that are easy to use, really solid mounts. So it really is a great way to look at reviews online for telescopes. Reviewers do a great job of promoting it and saying which ones are good and which ones aren't so good. But getting some kind of nurturing that wonder of the universe, that's what I'm really hoping this eclipse will do.
Yeah.
And we'll see this kind of boon in science and science education afterwards.
Yeah, that's really the point we want to make, is to not let this just pass by on April 8th and continue to nurture this, because, again, these are the people that we're going to need in the next generation. By the way, the closer we get to April 8th, the more attention we are paying to what the weather is going to be like. And obviously, it will be a huge letdown if we have an overcast day and we can't actually see the sun, but it is still going to get dark, right? I mean, how dark is this going to get?
Well, I definitely don't like to think of the cloudy situation, so I'm going to pretend it's going to be sunny here and nice and clear all across Ohio. So, when totality strikes and, it is dark enough, it's like twilight, but a different kind of shade of twilight. The sky takes on this kind of silver purple color.
Hmm.
It's dark enough for some of the brighter stars to pop out. The temperature drops 15 to 20 degrees.
Right.
It is startling how it changes very, very quickly. And then once totality's over, it goes back to normal pretty quick, like a few seconds, and it's back to normal sky. But if it's cloudy and the totality's happening, it's going to be dark, but it's not going to be a weird darkness. It's going to be just kind of like, nighttime in a cloudy sky. Okay, well, great.
Well,
so it's not going to be anything special.
No, that's
we
what
can
I,
see.
That's what I
we
wondered.
We can see cloudy. Yeah, we can see cloudy darkness all the time.
Well, that's what I was wondering. If it's overcast and it gets dark, does that mean that instead of being like twilight, it's going to seem like midnight out there? I mean, all of a sudden it'll be, pitch black in the middle of the day.
Well, the one thing I can say is I've never experienced it, so I can't say for certain, and I hope I never do.
I hope you don't. We will hope for great weather on April the 8th. And again, Dean Regas with us this morning, astronomer, author, and Ohio native, talking about all of the things that are connected with the eclipse in terms of inspiring the next generation to learn more about space and science in general. And Dean, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, and keep looking up.
So, happening around town here in just a little more than 2 weeks or so, the annual benefit auction for Findlay's Hope House. Lori Poland is with us from Hope House. Talk about the event. Hope Shines Bright.
Good morning.
The theme here. Lori, thanks very much for... Lauren, where did I come up with that? I don't know. Anyway, it's my brain is in a fog.
I don't know. My name on Facebook right now is Zelda because I got hacked again. So, I go by many names.
Okay. All right. Just don't call me late for dinner,
right,
as they say.
Exactly.
So, Lori, good to have you with us once again. Tell us about the event itself, first of all.
So Hope House has an auction annually. It is our biggest fundraiser of the year. We focus a lot on the shelter that evening and the ladies who live there, and the services that we provide for those homeless women and children. But it consists of both a live and a silent auction. We have various raffles. This year we have a flat top grill as one of our prizes, which is
pretty cool,
pretty popular right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also have a program, and this year our program will be Mr. Matt Dix. And Matt is a nationally known speaker and storyteller, and he also teaches fifth grade in his spare time. He's coming to us from the East Coast. But the cool thing about Matt is that he has overcome homelessness. There was a time in his life where he, through no fault of his own, faced homelessness. And as a child, he also, because of a divorce, lived in poverty. So he understands the people that we serve, what mm-hmm. it's like to I'll be rolling along, and all of a sudden I'm homeless, and I don't have any money, and I don't have any job prospects, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do, to overcoming all of that and becoming so successful. He tells his story in a humorous way, but also there's a serious side to him that he knows how important it is to make sure people understand homelessness, and overcoming homelessness is a really big deal, and
yeah.
And it is possible.
It's interesting. You talk about his accomplishments, mm-hmm. and not the type of person I would imagine that you would meet at first glance and think that this is an individual who had experienced homelessness.
Right.
Which just emphasizes the fact that this is a lot of the people that you serve would maybe fall into that category as well.
Right.
Not necessarily individuals you would think.
Right. I was speaking at a group several weeks ago, and afterward, one of the people in the group came up to me and said, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know I used to be one of your residents. Hmm. I lived at the shelter during a time in my life when I needed help."
Wow.
And again, you know, not looking around the room saying, "Oh, I bet, you know, you might have had some bad experiences in your life." You know, we are serving people that are coming from trauma. They're at the lowest point in their life many times, but that doesn't mean that they're staying at that low point. And Hope House gives them the help that they need to move forward and to move back into a safe and stable place of their own.
Also kind of makes us confront a rather uncomfortable reality that many of us are probably closer to that than we would like to admit. We're probably just one or two steps removed from being in that situation ourselves if we really thought about it.
You're right. And we saw that a lot with COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, people were going to work. They're living their life. They're paying their bills. Everything's fine. And all of a sudden, I went to work today. Both my wife and I no longer have jobs.
Yeah.
It's why the eviction prevention dollars we got back in 2020 were so important, and why we have continued to ask for eviction prevention dollars, because we really feel like sometimes people just need that little bridge, there's just a little gap that needs a little bridge to get them over the hump mm-hmm. to the other side, and can stop a catastrophic change in their life, which would be eviction.
So how do you do that? Because, again, there is the immediate, as you mentioned, preventing eviction mm-hmm. To the extent that you can, or the immediate of providing those who are homeless with somewhere to go. But that's only the beginning
right.
of addressing the problem.
So we feel like, and we know that it works, the case management side, case managers are licensed social workers. They walk beside our clients, you know, kind of grab them by the arm and say, "We're doing this, and I'm going to help you through this." Because it's easy to write a check and say, "Here, landlord, here's the rent for these people." Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder to say, "We're going to help you pay your rent, and then we're going to help you figure out, how did you get here? What are you going to do when you're in our program? And how are you going to stay independent when you leave?"
Yeah.
You know, when we're no longer assisting you.
Right.
Because most of our programs are short-term programs, because they're meant to bridge that gap, to assist people as they go on their way. It's not to pay your rent for the rest of your life, or mm-hmm. to allow you to have a crutch. It's, we are building a foundation there. And the over 80% of the people that we serve that successfully complete our programs are still housed a year later. So whatever, you know, guidance they didn't have before, we're giving them more tools in their toolbox so that they can stay on their own two feet. And what a lot of people don't understand, Chris, is that some of the people that we serve did not have the gifts that we had growing up. They didn't have that guidance, someone mm-hmm. to teach them about what is your responsibility as a renter, mm-hmm. what is the landlord's responsibility as your landlord. Mm-hmm. the importance of, you know, so many things that we have a foundation for in middle class
right.
that some of these folks just don't have.
Yeah.
Some of them do have it, but a lot of them do not. And so, you know, it doesn't occur to them sometimes to live life in a different way because this is what they've known. So we're trying to help them find a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it for over 30 years.
you mentioned that COVID was one thing that sort of exacerbated the problem or highlighted the problem or, you know, all of a sudden you get an influx. Mm-hmm. But how common is this in Hancock County?
How common is homelessness?
Yeah.
So the annual point in time count for 2023, which is a national count that happens in January across the nation, in Hancock County, we could count, and mind you, it's January, so, and when people see you coming, it's not like they're running out saying, hey, I'm here.
Right.
So the of what
and
we could,
by the very nature, it makes it difficult to count.
Yes, it does. I mean, I guess you can't do it in Arizona in July, so it's interesting we do it in Ohio in January, but
right.
it is what it is.
Yeah.
And Hope House works with the other entities in the community, also the police and the sheriff, to go out and physically count. In 2023, it was 171 folks in Hancock County. Mm. That is an increase of, I believe, 72% in the past
wow.
5 years.
Wow.
So homelessness is a problem. It's not like... Like, and we are what we call rural homelessness. A lot of people are living on what we call couch surfing. They're living
right.
on somebody's couch or they're staying in a porch or
not
something
sleeping
like
in
that.
doorways
Correct.
Necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are some instances
are some
of people
outside, right.
who sleep
mm-hmm.
outside, sleep in the parks
in
or what
tent.
Have you. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah, we don't have the tent cities.
Right. It's right. Not
so
like
that makes it also more easier to sort of think that it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's really not in our face. Yes, we see people sometimes, you know, there's a person out by Walmart with a cardboard sign or something.
Right. Yeah.
Are they really homeless? Are they really in need?
Right.
I don't know. I'm not going to judge them, but they still have the appearance of being homeless
right.
and needing help. But we do have a lack of housing in Hancock County, which mm-hmm. is a nationwide problem. And until we can build more residential housing, either units or just housing,
yeah.
We're going to have a problem yeah. with finding enough places for people to lay their head at night. Our community knows it's a problem. It's a big problem to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people, you know, including our mayor, who is interested in this problem and in looking at ways to address it.
Yeah. We've got more of a silent problem or an unseen mm-hmm. problem here as compared to maybe some urban centers. And again, you mentioned the percentages or the statistics. Mm-hmm. The after effects from COVID may still be throwing that off a little bit, but the mm-hmm. but the main point is that this is not a problem from which we are immune
exactly.
in the community. So again, hence the important work of Hope House and the importance of the benefit auction, because as you mentioned, it is the largest fundraiser. So so that goes into like the eviction prevention fund,
it goes into our programming.
Okay.
Funding. So mm-hmm. We do have gaps in our programs. I mean, we are a United Way agency. We get a lot of, we get state grants. I write a lot of private grants
mm-hmm.
Along with some of my coworkers. And of course, we get individual grants and monetary donations, also donations of in-kind goods. But this really helps fill a gap in our funding. So
yeah.
it's a fun night of, I mean, you know me, I want it to be fun. I don't want you to feel like you're pulling teeth because
right.
when is it going to be over? So we try to make it fun. We do have some nice prizes. I mean, there's a week's stay at a brand new home in Paso Robles, California.
Oh, wow.
We've got some artwork. We always have artwork from our residents who... who
Very
donate
cool.
Their talent to help us create something special.
Very
so
cool.
there are a lot of different things that are available to the people that come.
And it should be a really inspiring story mm-hmm. from the guest speaker as well. The date on it is April 12th. So as we mentioned, it's just a little more than 2 weeks away. How do folks get tickets?
So you can go to our website, www.findleyhopehouse.org, and there's a link on there. Registration is online. It is a paperless event, a cashless event, and you can register on there. It starts at 6 o'clock, doors open about 5:30, and then it's at the Hancock Hotel.
Okay, very good. So you know it's going to be good food.
Right,
so
we've got some really great food.
Yeah. Can't beat it. We've got a link up on our webpage for more information about the benefit auction and about the work of Hope House. And again, Lori Poland from Hope House with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I always appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Once again, I want to first apologize. My voice is a little rough this morning, so if I sound kind of raspy, it is just... I feel fine. It's just my voice is a little rough. I don't know what's going on, but we'll try and muddle through, and I think we'll be okay. So I apologize if I sound a little raspy this morning. Have one of those traditional radio voices. So in the broken news this morning, our dumb criminal of the day is the would-be car thief in Pasco, Washington, who not only failed miserably at his task, but it is also his choice of a mask that is sticking out in everyone's minds. The owners of a car dealership there in Pasco spotted the thief smashing the windows of a couple of vehicles on the lot in an apparent attempt to steal them. According to a news release by the Pasco Police Department, cops arrived on the scene fast enough to corner him before he could get any of the cars off the lot. The thief then tried to flee on foot, hopping fences and running through numerous backyards before the police finally caught him hiding beneath a boat. When he emerged, the suspect was wearing, as a makeshift mask, a pair of underwear on his head. Wearing a pair of underwear on his, I don't know if it was his. I don't know if the underwear was his, whether they were new underwear. I would hope that they were, but anyway. 15-year-old suspect was booked into juvenile detention and is facing two counts of attempted auto theft. It just says two counts of attempted auto theft. I guess they gave him a pass on the fleeing charge. Since, you know, he was wearing underwear on his head. So you'd probably try and flee, too. You wouldn't want anyone to know that. So, elsewhere in the broken news, this kid has a bright future ahead, I'm sure. Elsewhere in the broken news, a woman has been arrested after trying to force her way into a home in Los Fresnos, Texas, while trying to find her boyfriend. This is what makes this story a little bit crazy. The Cameron County Sheriff's Office says 21-year-old Brenda Ramirez was using an app on her phone to track down her boyfriend last Wednesday. She believed that her boyfriend was cheating on her, so she tracked him with this app on her phone. The homeowner told investigators that Ms. Ramirez started banging on their front door and tried to force her way inside. Where's my boyfriend? I know he's here. Here's the problem. She got the wrong address. She told deputies she was tracking her boyfriend's phone and had gone to the wrong address. She tried to charge into the home. She has been charged with criminal trespassing. The wrong house. No word on whether the boyfriend was actually cheating and if she ever located her boyfriend. I would now think probably ex-boyfriend after this, but anyway. File that under the category of sounded like a good idea at the time, I guess. Speaking of phones, this from Vancouver, Washington, back to the state of Washington. A man who was crawling on a telephone wire across Main Street in downtown Vancouver, Washington, is also a suspect in a crime spree. This happened on Saturday. Vancouver police say Ramondo Stanley allegedly stole a bicycle from a home, dropped it after being chased by a neighbor. Downtown, then, he is accused of entering a business, taking a cell phone from an employee, and then punching a person in the chest. I don't know if it was an employee or someone who was just in the store. a fire engine. So he tried to escape by with a high wire act, literally on a telephone wire across high above Main Street in downtown Vancouver. So, of course, law enforcement authorities figured that this might end badly. So they positioned a fire engine under the wire. And when Mr. Stanley predictably fell onto the fire truck, he was promptly arrested. He was charged with robbery and theft. They got downtown. They looked up. He's scaling this wire. He's going to fall. We're going to have... It's not going to be a problem to arrest this guy. And sure enough, he fell. And he was arrested. Remember the story that we had yesterday about the landlord in Pennsylvania that was trying to evict a tenant with a bunch of firearms, broke into the home with a bunch of firearms and ordered the tenant to get out? Here's another story about a crazy landlord in Pennsylvania. This from Lancaster County, where a landlord is behind bars after trying to get rid of his tenants by setting fire to their apartment. which seems rather counterproductive if you are the owner of the building. But Ronald Frisbee III, age 28, told police he was unhappy with the tenants after they allegedly broke the washer and dryer in the apartment, so he torched the entire building. Well, that showed him. That showed them. No one was hurt, according to police. Mr. Frisbee was charged with arson, burglary, and two counts of recklessly endangering another person. That does seem rather counterproductive, you know? If you're a landlord, that seems like a very inefficient way of getting rid of your tenants. It'll get rid of the tenants, but we have bigger problems. And finally, in the broken news this morning, there was a recent survey that I saw a story on the Newswire said 84% of people believe karma is real. 84% believe that karma is real. And here is a story that may prove that. A new Korean restaurant in Melbourne, Australia has received attention due to the petty revenge sign on the front door. The owner of the restaurant apparently put this sign on the front door saying, "Hey, Sophia, you broke up with me because I was poor. Now I have money to open a Korean barbecue. Are you regretting it now?" this has gone viral online. The story has gone viral online. As one person put it, revenge is a dish best served barbecued. Although one other person points out that Sophia might not see the sign from her new boyfriend's yacht. So there is that. And some have supposed that maybe the whole thing is a ruse to gain attention for the restaurant. But nonetheless, it is a... That's karma right there. You broke up with him because I was poor. Now I've got enough money to open a Korean barbecue restaurant. How do you like me now? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Do you know an exceptional teacher who's made a positive impact in your life or the life of a student? It's time to shine a bright spotlight on these educational heroes with the Findlay Rotary Golden Apple Awards. Nominate your favorite teacher from Findlay or Hancock County online at findlayrotary.org before April 5th. Nominate an outstanding educator for the Golden Apple Awards. Make a difference. Honor a teacher by visiting findlayrotary.org today. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. It is spring cleaning season, and in a new survey of Americans from every state in the union, they find that individuals in Idaho and Maine are those that spend the most time cleaning their homes. Idaho and Maine are the cleanest states. Now, I don't know where Ohio ranks among the 50 states. They didn't, at least the report I saw, didn't break it all down, you know, top to bottom on the list. Just gave the top two being Idaho and Maine. But we are not at the top of the list. It says here the average American cleans their home once a week and declutters their home three times per year. The most time is spent cleaning the kitchen. 50% of those in the survey say that's the room that takes the most time to clean. The least favorite room to clean, predictably, is the bathroom, 36%. The rooms that are least cleaned in the home, the garage, which I thought was interesting. I wouldn't necessarily consider the garage a room, but cleaning the garage is rare. And bedrooms are the least clean room in the home, which makes sense. I mean, theoretically, nobody's going to see your bedroom except you. So, you know, as long as you're happy with it, it doesn't matter. Unless you're giving a tour of your home, most people aren't going to be in there. So that's the room we tend to ignore. The least favorite room to clean, as we mentioned, is the bathroom. 30% say cleaning the shower is their least favorite activity when cleaning. That's what I would have guessed cleaning the toilet. I mean, I get the shower. It's no fun either, but cleaning the toilet. Man. Wiping down the bathroom, mopping, and cleaning windows and glass doors are also right up there in the top five for least favorite cleaning activities. But I thought this was interesting. Despite the fact that we are not actually as diligent about cleaning our homes as maybe we should be, according to the survey, more than half of those in the poll believe that their homes are cleaner than others. 52% say their homes are cleaner than other people's. And more than a quarter, 26% of Americans say they will judge others for having messy homes. What is that about people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones? Apparently, we are very judgmental toward others for not having cleaned their home. But according to the survey, we're not doing such a hot job ourselves. Well, spring has officially arrived now. Every single day, it's feeling more and more like that. I mentioned earlier that we mowed the lawn for the first time.
I did see some on Sandusky Street.
I think we were the first in our neighborhood.
I was like, wow.
Mowed the lawn. Not the front lawn. I was talking about earlier, but the front lawn doesn't need it yet because it's a lot more shaded and gets less sun, so it doesn't grow as fast. But the backyard is where the dog poops. Yeah. So that had to be mowed. And because if it got any longer, we'd be baling it in the spring. So so we have already done that. Spring has officially arrived. Yes. And we start to think about getting outdoors once again. Time to get an update on April programs and activities from the Hancock Park District. And Michelle Rumschlag is here. Hard to believe we're talking about April already.
Where did March go?
Yeah.
Right? And you should be outside all the time. I know people are like, oh, it's nicer
out. That's right.
But you should be, right? Don't be a fair weather park visitor.
There is something, there are great things to experience all four seasons.
But I get it. It is kind of when you don't have to wear the bundling. Right. It's like, okay, I mean.
This is when we come out of hibernation, when we get a little cabin fever. And
right? So you don't need to grab a coat. You can just like, oh, I can just walk outside with like, you know, what I've got on, and you don't have to bundle and stuff. Not until, no snow talk until like December, I promise. So,
what's going on in the month of April here, first of all?
Again, this is just like, I've got 4 pages worth of programs, and I'm only going to talk about a couple. So all of our programs for the end of March here. And then April and May is HancockParks.com.
Okay.
And then also wanted to put a little plug out there, summer camps.
Right.
So summer camps have been live at least a good month now, and some of them are full. So we have filled them. So those are some of our one-day adventure day camps that we do. So if you're thinking, gosh, there's like 4 or 5, I think, that are already filled. And then there's some that only had a few spots, and I haven't looked since like last week. So not sure where that's at. But if you get on, of course, the program's on the program calendar, but the parks or the summer camps has its own page, and you look at it by June, July, and August.
Okay. So if you think you want to send your kids to camp, there's some that are still open, but the sooner the better.
If, let's say that we haven't finalized all the family summer plans yet. Right. We don't know exactly when summer vacation is happening. Can I sign up for camp and then back out later?
Yes. Yeah, so you can, with all of our programs, that's a good question. As long as you call up and say, hey, you know, right, things have come up. Mm-hmm. If you call and cancel before the deadline registration, that means we can open up that spot. You can get your money back.
Okay.
And then with our camps, it's the day before with a lot of them. So, And I think we've had that actually already.
And there's never a shortage of people who are wanting to fill those spots.
Correct.
So,
So we can do that, you know, but you need to, there's some paperwork and stuff that you have to go through. You have to call the office for that. Can't do that online. That's going to be an in-person, you know, a conversation. And then depending on the cost, there's some paperwork and
I bring it up because again we talk about it's filling up and you don't want to miss it but if you
sometimes you don't have those things finalized, people aren't the planners and figuring things out for I'm looking at next year, let's be honest, with some stuff, so I get on everybody's we have to it's just kind of what
so summer
on.
Camp registration is well underway. We definitely want to point that out. What else is happening here?
Well, we've got lots of programs happening, and we're kind of gearing up for the eclipse. Like, it's like less
everybody
than 2 weeks.
Yep, everybody.
And so we do have things kind of happening that weekend in the parks. One of them, we're starting on Friday, April 5th. We're having a spring bird hike out at River Bend Recreation Area. It's going to be in the evening, so at 6 o'clock. And then this is for our older teens and adults for ages 16 and up. And going to be looking for, so again, that spring weather, we're starting to see the turkey vultures are already back, killdeer, there's birds that have started migrating back, but more are going to be coming through as spring continues. And so looking for those different types of birds, including yellow-rumped warblers and things. So if you got binoculars, bring them, great. If not, we'll have some available for you to use.
Okay.
So no registration, just need to show up. So if you want to venture out the weekend of the eclipse, you know, to do some things in the park, that will be one of those activities happening.
Okay. What else is going on?
Well, moving past the eclipse, we've got some programs for little kids. So on Thursday, April 11th, we've got our Little Hands Nature Club program, and it's a spring birds hike. So again, looking for the spring birds with with the little ones. This is also taking place at Riverbend there in the Oxbow Bend Activity Area parking lot. It's at 10 o'clock, and this is for kids ages 3 to 6 with an adult, but other age siblings can attend. Again, free, no registration necessary. Just need to show up. And again, maybe, you know, wear appropriate footwear. So if it's April,
right,
it could be squishy, it could be, you know, maybe wear older shoes or boots or something like that. But we'll be hiking again, looking at the different birds. So again, just kind of dress for the weather. Thursday, April 11th at 10 o'clock there at Riverbend.
All righty. Anything else to highlight here?
We're also providing a program for some homeschoolers. So on Monday, April 15th, we're going to have herps for homeschoolers. And those unfamiliar with the herps term, it's herpetology. So that's the study of amphibians and reptiles.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about those different groups of animals, go on a hike, hopefully find some frogs, snakes, do a craft. That's taking place at Oakwoods Nature Preserve, meeting on the Discovery Center porch. It's from 1 until 3, and it's geared to ages 5 to 14. Now, there's no cost, but we do need you to register by that Monday morning, excuse me. So the program starts at 1, but if you get on before 8 o'clock on Monday, I know we've got a good number of kids signed up. So we do have a maximum. I'm not sure where we are. I think we're about half filled with that one.
Okay.
And it's a drop-off program, too, just for those. So it's 1 to 3. Again, the 5 to 14-year-olds want to learn about herps. Monday the 15th at 1 o'clock.
Very good. Just a sampling of the stuff that's going on in the month of April at the parks. And again, to remind folks, summer camp registration is open and filling up quickly. So if you have not done that yet, definitely want to check that out as well. Again, Michelle Rumschlag is here with the Hancock Park District. All of that information is on the website, right?
Yes, hancockparks.com.
Okay. Michelle, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, consumers around the country have complained loudly about skyrocketing car insurance rates that have far exceeded the rate of inflation. We'll have some pointed questions to ask the president and CEO of the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.